Wendy, Josh Gondelman is here.
And I already feel like an old lady.
Why do you feel like an
old lady?
Because
Josh walked in and I'm like, yes, I'm getting my knee replaced on Thursday.
No, that means it's going to make you a newer lady.
I guess.
You're going to have a robot knee.
Yes, it is.
I guess.
It's nothing but good news.
I just feel old. And you look so young. I feel like we could be your parents
no,
or your grandparents.
Get out of here. I'm young, but I'm bald beyond my years. So I'm a...
Good for you, Josh.
Yeah, thank you. No,
that's great.
Pleasure.
I have to warn you, Wendy has a thing for the Jewish fellas.
Oh,
yep.
That's sweet.
Yep.
You're Jewish? I wouldn't know you're Jewish. See, you all from laugh at me.
From my last name and face and general demeanor.
We've had rabbis sitting here and Wendy go, you're Jewish? I did not know you were Jewish.
I can't
tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is a pleasure to meet you. You are handsome.
Thank you. Likewise.
I want to ask you just real quickly before we get started. You had mentioned off the air that you're from Boston. Why don't you have a Boston accent?
It got worked out of me in college. People would make fun of me for saying stuff like bubbla, which is a water fountain.
Bubbla? Bubbler.
Yes, bubbler. Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. I need a translator.
So was it a gradual process, Josh, or was it like overnight where all of a sudden you just shedded the Boston
accent? I never had a harsh one. I never had a hash one guy.
Yeah.
It was always mild. But it was, over the course of my freshman year, people just make fun of me like, you can't say everything is wicked something.
Right.
And I was like, why not, dude, kid, guy?
They do tend to use the word wicked as like a filler word all the time.
Yeah, all the time. And yeah. I'm trying to reintegrate it into my vocabulary because I think, why should I be ashamed of my terrible heritage?
You should.
I just don't know how you can get rid of a thick Boston accent that wonderfully.
Thank you.
I don't hear any remnants of it at all.
People think I'm Canadian. I'm also, it doesn't stick because I'm polite. And so it's very difficult to have a Boston accent when you're not just like yelling at strangers.
But a Canadian accent and a polite accent are almost
very
one and the same.
Yeah.
They're almost
the
same.
Venn diagram is very close to eclipsing one another.
Josh is performing at Zany's, now through Wednesday, December the 6th. All kinds of chances to... Well, wait. Wednesday's tomorrow. That's
tomorrow.
Fast.
So tonight and tomorrow.
That's it.
Yeah. I was there last night. It was wonderful.
And you did the one on Wells.
Yes.
The original Zany's.
So fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was my first time through and it was really a pleasure.
Don't you get the feeling when you're in there, there's some rooms... I started to tell you this before we were on air... They're just built for comedy. They're shaped like a box,
yep.
And there's no distractions. You got to focus on the show.
100%.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah. And it's clearly like you're there to see comedy in a room. It's not a bar that was like maybe we can wring a few extra dollars
right.
out of some saps by
right.
having a guy talk for an hour.
Right.
So it's a lovely place to see a show, it feels like. And it was so fun to perform there.
Do you ever, like before you perform, you walk around and you can see the history of the room because they have pictures of all the other comics and you go... It really is a who's who of stand-up comedy the last 30 years.
It is really cool. It's great to see like old 30-year-old headshots of people that I started looking up to. And, like it's awesome. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so fun.
Who are some of the people you look up to?
Oh my gosh, I'm so Boston-centric too, like because it's just people that I saw when I started. So like
Dennis Leary, probably
love him. I love him.
He was like a legendary, and we're stylistically very different. But like even like a Gary Gulman,
he's starting, so good.
Bill Burr, when I started, was like a guy that is like, oh, he's from here. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Mike Birbiglia is from there. Mike Kaplan. There's
Lenny
so
Clark.
Many wonderful Lenny Clark, yeah. Tony V. There's like it's just such a history, and so. Yeah, and there's so many people that I just would name. It'll sound like the end of a rap song from the 90s. I'll just name everybody I've ever known and liked.
So every city does have a personality when it comes to the stand-ups they produce. Boston's is a very well-read group of guys. They're really a very intelligent bunch of stand-up comics.
You. I think it's like smart and aggressive. That's what I like about Boston, where you get like there's like colleges and then sports. So it's people who will curse you out, but you have to look it up afterwards. You're like, what did he call me?
It should take a little work, though, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I think don't just spoon feed it to him.
Yeah. Have you gotten to meet or work with the heroes? Have you worked with any of these guys?
Yeah, I got to, a lot of those people I have, I got to work with Stephen Wright a few years ago, opened for him at a theater in Western Mass. It was,
was like
really a thrill. He was so nice, and I got to sit, and he kind of sits and plays. He sits and plays guitar for part of the show. So I'm sitting backstage and he's sitting and we're just like at eye level. And I was like, oh, this is such a thrilling experience to get to see this person who I like admire so much and to have been on the show with him and then to get to watch this kind of like from intimately backstage.
Yeah.
Really cool.
I didn't realize Stephen Wright was still performing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he picks his spots pretty judiciously, but he... occasional theater gigs, and it was
I loved him.
A friend of a friend booked me, friend John, and so he called me on a way. I just moved to New York a month and a half ago, and he said, "Can you come back up to Massachusetts and open for Stephen Wright on Friday?" This is Wednesday, and he's like, "Can you open for Stephen Wright on Friday?" And I said, "Yeah," and he said, "Don't you want to look at your calendar?" And I said, "No,
no.
What am I doing that's better than that?"
I just became open.
Yeah, I've cleared it.
Right.
I had nothing. It's like, what am I doing?
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, you are a writer for the show that I consider to be the best written comedy show on television right now, Last Week Tonight.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much.
Every week I watch and I say to myself, I don't know how they produce a show that quickly that's that informative and funny at the same time.
Thank you.
It's amazing the work you guys do.
I really appreciate that. That means a ton.
When you got that job, did you have any idea? Because I know you were there from the beginning,
yeah.
Right? So there was no really inkling of what that show, the importance that show could be, right? You couldn't have guessed that.
No, I didn't know what it was going to be. I knew news-based, and I knew John, obviously, who's so funny and was so funny on The Daily Show.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have an idea for like what the feel of the show was going to be in the structure. And then kind of it even took a few weeks, like watching it from the inside, to emerge, because we do these like long mm-hmm. comedy, like, you know, issue news based topical comedy pieces. And so it took a while for like the one on the first show was like 8.5 minutes about the election in India. And then the next one was like 13 minutes about the death penalty. And mm-hmm. they're like, and I think the idea was like, if people will watch John talk about the death penalty for 13 minutes, they can watch him talk about anything for any length of time. So kind of open it up, and we do pieces that are like 20 something minutes at times.
But when it was first conceived,
yeah.
When Last Week Tonight was first conceived, nobody was thinking, well, we'll have Donald Trump to play off of. The thought originally was we'll just take different topics every week, but Trump was just a gold mine, right?
Well, I think, yeah, someone's nightmare came to life,
yeah.
And now it's – I honestly, like, miss before.
Do you?
I do, because it's so hard because he's so consistent.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, how many more times can we say, like, this person is mean and incoherent?
Yeah.
And so it's – a challenge to think about new ways to cover this person.
I guess that would be. Mm-hmm. I mean, Donald Trump provides his own material, definitely. Mm-hmm. But you're right. You don't want to keep rehashing the same stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, he's doing new things all the time, but like the tone is so similar
right.
that it's hard to, and it's so dense to unpack, because sometimes he'll say something and you go, well, I mean, that I think was a lie. That was a misreported fact, and then that was just babble. So, like,
right.
It's hard to, like, dig in and write jokes when you're like, okay, because our show, we try to, like, explain things really thoroughly with
yeah,
the jokes.
Sure.
And it's hard to write, like, an explanatory joke when it has to do so much work to be like, I don't know what he meant when he said that,
yeah.
But I know, like, we could all die because of it.
Why, and I don't know how this came to be, but I'm okay with it.
No, that's okay.
There's almost a weekly gouge toward the Olsen twins.
Oh,
I'm not
yeah.
positive why, but I enjoy it every week.
I don't remember where that came from, but it's so funny. And I love, like, one of my favorite things is when we can get John to say things that are just, like, objectively ridiculous or dumb.
Yeah.
And so, like, I love that he'll there's, like, a theory on the show where he thinks the running joke for, like, the whole season four was that he thinks that the Olsen twins are one person
right.
who moves very quickly back and forth.
Right.
And there's like no explanation for why he thinks that. There's no sourcing. And he just will just like he'll say it
yeah.
and get like so animated about it. And that
yeah.
makes it so fun because he's so – I think so much of the show, the comedy is so sincere and
yeah.
comes from such a heartfelt place.
Yep.
And to get him to just be like a total lunatic for like 30 seconds and just like, I know I'm about to break this thing wide open, but British. And – it's so fun.
It's great. I love it.
It's a blast.
Josh Gondelman is here. Stand-up comic, writer. You can see him at Zanies tonight or tomorrow night. All the information is at zanies.com. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Josh Gondelman. He's one of the writers for one of the sharpest written shows on television, Last Week Tonight. He's appearing at Zanies tonight and tomorrow night. Go to zanies.com for all the details. Talk, if you would, Josh, about the difference between writing for yourself and writing for somebody else. When you're doing stand-up, you've got one process, but when you're writing for somebody else, I imagine it's a little bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely different, especially writing for someone like John, who's so funny and so smart. I feel like I do a lot more looking things up. When I'm writing my own stand-up, I get to say whatever I want, and if I'm wrong, that's fine. But I have when I at my job, there are standards, and
yeah.
I have to meet them. But I do think I learned this from listen from Brian Kiley, who's a long time from Boston, super funny Boston comedian originally, who's written for Conan for years and years, who just like doesn't do topical stuff in his stand-up act because he just puts that all into the writing for Conan. And that was like drawing that line was really helpful, because then I can go, okay, here's what I do at work, and like anything else is going to be that's for me. So like I don't have to worry, you know, when I'm writing a joke about my dog, I don't have to be like, maybe this is good for the show. Because, you know, the nation doesn't care about my fat little pug. Although they should. She's adorable.
What's her name?
Busy.
Oh.
Yeah, she's precious.
Busy the pug.
Yeah, she's very good.
Is it anything like what we saw as kids on the Dick Van Dyke Show? Is the process anything at all like what Rob Petrie went through?
It is. I mean, it's a little less silly.
Yeah.
It's... Because so much of it with what we do, it's like reading articles and watching documentary footage.
It's like homework, for gosh sakes.
There's a lot of – I mean, there were episodes – we did an episode on the opioid crisis, which was like very difficult to find funny angles in them because it's such a tragedy. And I remember there were 2 days where my whole job was I was sitting in my office watching documentaries about opioid addiction and drug manufacturing, just kind of like on the verge of tears in my office because it was so serious, being like, this is comedy. This is what I wanted. This is my dream.
But a slightly different approach than you had anticipated.
And when I do stand up, I would say my preparation involves very rarely crying at documentaries.
And when you're writing for someone else, the pressure's on because people will judge you if you suck.
Yeah.
You know what I
Definitely.
Mean?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, when it's me, I don't mind, like, you know, I trying something and failing that's not the ideal. But when I'm doing something for myself, it's okay if it goes a little sideways from night to night. Or, like, you know, I have one new joke somewhere that doesn't work at an open mic or something and it doesn't work. That's fine. But, like, if I'm, handing in bad stuff to my boss, like, someone sees it right away and goes, like, ugh, you know,
right, that's bad. That's bad, right?
Yes,
like, that's always bad.
You know, this is bad. You have to know this is bad. So it's definitely, you have to bring it day to day.
Explain this to me, because I can't figure it out. And I watch the show every week, but it's masterful how you guys pull this off. There will be a topic and there's a narrative that goes A to B to C to D. And I can't figure out how it is that everybody's jokes just fit into that narrative. Who's doing that?
Well, I think they try to be very careful to make sure that everything fits together really nicely. So, like, the process of making the week show is a little longer than the week. It goes a couple extra weeks. And so... it's like the writers, there's a great research staff, there's a whole team of people that deal with the footage and like finding really interesting footage. And then John and one of our executive producers, Tim, are like really, really hands-on and smart and thorough about getting in there and making sure it sounds right and making sure the story's right. And it's very collaborative with the writers and the research and the footage people. So it's like a whole wonderful team effort. And then they're really scrupulous about making sure the jokes fit the piece and the tone and the substance, and that it's not kind of non sequitur jokes.
You guys pull it off beautifully.
Thank you.
That's a lot of work, man.
Yeah, so much.
It is. But it's nice, and it's like it's a great place to work. Everyone's really great to work with.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of what we do. So it makes it better, you know, because comedy, like stand up comedy, is a job, but it's travel and then some writing and then an hour a night.
Yeah.
And then this is like, I go to an office.
It's a real job.
like a grown up.
It's a real job.
Do you have a briefcase?
I don't have a briefcase.
Oh, you got to get a briefcase.
I still have a backpack.
Okay.
Right. I'm not all the way grown up.
Right.
Did you see any of the footage? John was hosting an event at the Tribeca Film Festival with Dustin Hoffman. Mm-hmm. And he kind of called Dustin Hoffman out on some things that had happened in the past. Are you up on any of this?
I didn't see the footage, but I read, like, last night I saw an article. Someone had tweeted it at me.
Yeah.
And I mean, it seems like that I think John has strong beliefs, and he is and I appreciate that, like, it's instructive and inspirational to me to watch someone who, like, thinks a thing and vets it right and tries to say the thing that he thinks is right rather than the thing he thinks is easy. And I think that was like a righteous way to behave, to kind of like to bring up the elephant in the room instead of being like, look, we're all here to have fun and ignore the elephant.
Right. It could have easily gone that way.
Totally.
For people who don't know, he was hosting, it's the anniversary of the movie Wag the Dog, and he had a panel of people, Dustin Hoffman being one of them, and he kind of questioned Dustin Hoffman about what had happened years ago while making the movie Wag the Dog with an intern, And Dustin Hoffman answered it, and John said, "I got to be honest, I'm not happy with the answer," and it kind of went off from there.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
I gotta watch the footage online.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's not how you expect things to go.
Yeah, right.
And I also think that like we have a tendency to do things that are like smooth and easy, right,
safe.
and not rock the boat. And I think like for him to use his position as like a known comedy figure and not do the thing that like, well, this will be easy for me. It'll give me a reputation as being a guy that's like easy to work with and everyone will be, you know, that will kind of have a soft touch with someone because they're, you know, a very talented actor and a legendary actor.
Yeah.
I think that it's like, it's cool for me as to see him be thorough about like, cause he'll, you know, it's stuff we talk about on the show.
Yeah.
And I think if it comes up on the show and he, instead of, you know, when he has a chance in his personal life, when he can interrogate it in the same way as like, cool to me to see.
Yeah.
Because that's what the show's all about. You know, everybody says stuff about Jimmy Fallon. He keeps the light on. That's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
But with John Oliver, it would be way different if he didn't bring it up.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's, you know, it's like, he's a good dude and it's good to work for someone who's like a thoroughly good person.
I love hearing that.
And who,
that is good.
And who doesn't, you know, he doesn't leave the office and get into a car powered with the blood of endangered seals and you know, drive to a floating mansion
that
in the sky.
That would be bad.
Yeah,
that
would be
all
bad.
Be very bad.
And you know, pal, you know, calls up Harvey Weinstein and has a dinner reservation with him.
Good. I'm glad that doesn't happen. Josh, it's so cool to meet you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Congratulations on all the good things happening to you. You deserve it
all.
Thank
you very much. I appreciate that. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Josh Gondelman is his name. A writer for Last Week Tonight. You can watch that on HBO or go see Josh live at Zany's tonight and or tomorrow night. Zany's.com has all your ticket information. We'll take a quick break and then there's more show. Bill and Wendy on WGN.